Good morning, everyone. So this year throughout Lent, we've been looking at the ways that Jesus' life and teachings collide with the status quo. That's been sort of the through line and theme for this season. Christ collides. So I'm going to invite you to stand up, and in a twist on passing the peace, I'm going to invite you to nonviolently collide with one another. Which is just to say, maybe lean into the person next to you or give a fist bump and say, peace to you, or happy Easter, or may Christ collide with you this year. So please stand and collide. Well done, everyone. Thank you. So as I said, in the last 6 weeks, we have looked at how Christ collides with our biases, with our notions of condemnation, with our priorities, with our selfishness, with our blinders, with our expectations. And now, after colliding with one another, we put our kaleidoscope eyes on once more to consider how Christ collides with death. And right in that phrase, we are off on a different foot than we usually are, I think, when we think about death. Usually death is the one doing the colliding. You might try to set yourself on a collision course with death, or maybe do everything in your power to avoid death. But we all know that we'll have our showdown in the Thunderdome with death, and that two men enter, one man leaves isn't going to end with us left standing. So you got to forgive my Gen X-isms every once in a while. So, but we all know that, and yet many religions across human history and geography have components or stories within them involving resurrection or different encounters with a personified death that one, for example, tricks into releasing its victim. Across the world and across history, so many cultures, so many religions have these stories that seem to bring to bear a universal imagination about death and its power over us, and the fact that we don't want it to have power over us. I had to laugh this week when one such example came up in a conversation. So this was a learning for me. Apparently there's a whole sort of subgenre within Japanese literature in which characters are transported to other worlds. It's called isekai. And one of the most common ways for this to happen is for a character to die, and then they'll wake up sort of transported, now they're living in another world. And it has become so common that it's kind of a trope or a meme that the way they do this in most animes is for a character to step out into the street and all of a sudden a truck comes by and collides with them. And it's become so common that it has its own word. It's called truck-kun. And so, like, if you're watching an anime and somebody steps out, you're like, oh no, like, there's going to be a truck. And, like, sure enough, that's how you get transported to another world. Is with this, which is kind of an odd personification of a Grim Reaper type thing. But it's not just death, it's transportation to another world after death. So yes, I think the human imagination seems to seek this out, stories that play out scenarios in which death is outwitted or doesn't have the final word in some way. And I remember a children's time in which Ed Cain, I don't know if Ed's here today, there he is, talked about the word metaphor as a truck, because metaphor literally means to transfer or to carry across. In my mind, you told this story about you, but in looking up a Facebook post, you wrote about this. I think you were quoting Stephen Jay Gould as part of that. That the science writer Stephen Jay Gould told this story of seeing a moving truck while he was sitting at a cafe in Greece, and that the moving company name on the truck was Metaforo, or Metaphor. And Gould realized that, yes, metaphors move us to understanding through symbolism. They, like, move meaning to us, sort of through story or symbol. So anyway, trucks were not really on my bingo card for this Easter sermon, so that was a little surprising to kind of find metaphoro trucks and truck-kun in Japanese literature sort of in my imagination this week, but there you go. The Lord moves in mysterious ways, I guess you could say. You could say that the life of Jesus, in a way, is such a vehicle, a metaphor of truck. God's attempt to transfer or carry across to us the meaning of life and love. Hopefully not colliding with us, but carrying. By packaging all of that in a human life, a language that we might better understand than apparently we were able to understand the commandments in stone, for example. But here's one of the things that I love about the Christian story. Because I think that even though it was a beautiful act of generosity to want to transfer to us in some way that we could really understand, I think that God fell in love with life in the process of doing that, while coming here as Jesus. Even in the midst of the betrayals and suffering of his death, he cried out, begging to be able to stay, that the cup of suffering might pass from him. I think that God fell in love with life and us in coming here as Jesus. And it didn't end up being just a one-way transfer of truth and enlightenment in the metaphoro truck of Jesus, but that God, who breathed and is breather of life, got to experience embodied, in-breathed life. And as Jesus, God chose not to reach for the divine exception or exemption, not to be plucked down from the cross, not to be spared from the fate that befalls all of the rest of us, life forms on earth. And most especially not to allow violence to twist who he was. And somehow that drained the power out of death. The tomb was empty. And somehow Christ was everywhere then. In strangers that were recognized as Jesus, once they did or revealed something Jesus-like. Sometimes it was breaking bread together or sharing a meal, revealing scars that matched his story. But you'll note that the story that we read today ends with an open tomb. That is the Easter story. It's not actually an encounter yet in that story. Jesus had said, "Whenever I'm not with you, whenever you can't see me, look around you and you'll find me, probably among whoever has the least power. And whatever you say or do to them, like, that will be for me." But I think Easter is one of the days that we humans who follow the teachings of Jesus are most in danger of getting sidetracked. We go into our rational brains and think, how could this or could this really have happened in the way the story is told? And I think many of us have experienced so much pressure on us that there's only one way to prove you believe a story. Only one right way to say you believe in the Easter story. That I think it actually strips from us the true understanding of the story, the meaning, the deep knowing within us of the truth of this story, the truth that can change us, this truth about the fact that death is not the end, that things can come from that, and that we can stand up to death. And I think the intention of the Easter story, of God's Jesus project is to free us from making death the most important thing, the thing that we'll do anything to avoid, break all our moral codes for, to show us that death has no capital D, and therefore we can live more bravely or more fully, more abundantly, in less fear. Not because death isn't, but because death is only what it is. And it's not the end of love or belovedness. It's not the end of meaning. It's not the end of our stories or our impact. Death is not the end. We don't know what comes next. If our collision with Truk-kun, whenever it may be, will send us to some next life. But in the Christian story, in this faith story, death doesn't have the final say or the last word. We will somehow rise above. But I also wonder, one of the other things that I think can distract us from this, about this story sometimes, is that we stop with the trying to wrap our brains around the story. And really, I think all of these stories, everything about our faith, is pointing us to what does it mean for us now? How does it impact how we live here with one another? And I confess, I live with a lot of fear right now. I feel paralyzed by the death I'm witnessing in Palestine, in Ukraine, in countries that aren't receiving aid, in places I know that I don't know about because I'm struggling to pay attention to it all. The deaths that I feel are being made unnecessarily inevitable. I hear people speaking of, and rationally or not, I share for myself a fear of the consequences of speaking out and speaking up about the violence I do not believe in. The Anabaptist tradition has sometimes, I think, glorified death in the service of what you believe in. See also the Mirror of the Martyrs. In ways that I don't see Jesus doing of his own death. He walked hard paths, true to his beliefs and the teachings of love, despite fear, despite saying very honestly, is there any other way this can go? I'm open to it. If there's any other way this can go that still involves me walking the path of love. So there are so many questions in this story that I hope we can sit with, even though there are so many questions, I think, that we can get stalled by about the literal meanings of the story or how we match up with different versions of what it means to believe in something. We often read Blessings by Jan Richardson in our services here, and I know some of you are familiar with her, but for those of you who aren't, she has a very unique style or voice that she writes her blessings in, which is that instead of saying, this is a blessing, may God bless you in this way, she writes from the perspective of the blessing and says, what this blessing wants for you is... which I find to be definitely unique, but kind of a beautiful voice to speak out of. And so I want to close this sermon a little bit in her voice and style by saying what this sermon wants for you, in case I didn't make it clear. What this sermon wants for you is for you to feel freed from the need to explain this miracle in words. Especially the words of others. What this sermon wants for you is for you to feel freed from fears of death being the final word for you, and for you to be suffused with a sense of your infinite worth. What this sermon wants for you is for you to be able to mainline this story, to allow the truck to deliver the truth to you however you can hear it. This sermon wants for you to be empowered and encouraged to live in the midst of fearful times. True to the love we believe in, that I know you believe in, that we know. What this sermon wants for you and wants for us is to have eyes for resurrection, to see what is happening within us and around us, the ways that love is coming to life, the ways that even after death, even in the midst of it, that the story goes on, that what we're participating in matters. This story wants for us to be able to experience that miracle and to walk in it together. Amen.